Hi, this is John Johnson. What we're going to hear in a minute or two is the discussion that took place on Radio EduTalk on Wednesday, the 21st of November, 2012. Unfortunately, when we made the recording, the first few minutes didn't get recorded. The live show went out, but the first few minutes we missed. So this is sort of by way of apology. And apologies to our guests, who were Stephen Reed, who is a consultant, educational consultant for A Higher Place, Neil Winton, who is an English teacher in Perthshire, and Amanda Corrigan, who is the course leader of the BA degree at University of Strathclyde. Unfortunately, we've lost their introduction to themselves, and I don't think I could do them justice, but I think they do themselves a great deal of justice in the following conversation. We also miss out the first part, unfortunately, of David's preamble about the document we were discussing, which was Teaching Scotland's Future from the National Partnership Group. I'll just let it cut straight into the middle of David's preamble now. Thanks for listening.
There's also major kind of project or work streams in relation to leadership, and the media have picked up on the idea of maybe within 5 years that it should be expected that head teachers have some kind of qualification in leadership or management to go into a future head teacher post. And also, as no doubt Amanda will be talking about later on, major changes to the initial phase teacher education, and they talk about a kind of continuous development into the early career of teachers within schools. So I'm going to put Amanda on the spot first of all, just for your general thoughts, but I'll put it to you, Amanda, and then to Stephen and Neil. Is this the dawn of a new model of professional learning?
I think it will be up to us as a profession to make it the dawn of something new and something innovative and something interesting and exciting. And I think if it's none of those things, we all need to take some kind of corporate responsibility for that. These reports come out, and sometimes we wait on the edges waiting for someone to tell us what to do, and we wait for people to come up with the policy, and then we complain when we have to implement it. We've got a real opportunity to make decisions that can change the future of teacher education and the education of teachers. And we're talking about that from the minute we enter the doors of the university until we retire. We're looking at that whole sweep of education. And I think already, definitely the poor journalism around this last week made it sound like a document that was about half a page long. They picked out three interesting pieces of information and decided, well, they thought the news thought were most interesting and decided they were going to just talk about those. I think as well that we have to be more innovative and more creative in the way that we think about things like leadership and who are the leaders of education and how can we work together. I think sometimes we jump straight to, well, this is all about teachers and it's all about head teachers, when actually there are lots of people who work in education who this should really be impacting on too. So I think we just need to be careful that we don't be seen to be doing things to the teaching profession that only means somebody who's in a classroom or in a school.
I really enjoyed the report. I read the Donaldson report in the first instance anyway, and I think what this does is, I'm not convinced it's anything new. I think what it is it's a real focus. It's taken a real focus on the things that I think lots of people have been trying to do in pockets and pull them together. And there's an emphasis in the report on the universities, the GTCS, the schools, Education Scotland and local government really pulling something together and creating some sort of consistency and uniformity in what I think other people right across education have been trying to do in pockets. I really enjoy that idea. And I think from an outside perspective, from somebody outside each of those things as an independent, I think it's something really worth looking forward to. And it's, for me, it's a very positive report.
From my point of view, I almost feel now that I'm going to be devil's advocate for a lot of this tonight. There's a lot of positive, and I think there's a great recognition that things are changing and that this is a way. But I have a couple of real problems with it. One, picking up on exactly what Stephen was just saying, that there does seem to be a desire for central control of our development as teachers. And it comes to me that if there is central control that we are offering these particular courses, then actually that is in danger of limiting choice. We don't have the freedom to follow our own interests. We don't have the freedom to chase down interesting avenues, which may be blind alleys, but which may also lead to real innovations. And I suppose that is tied in with the notion of the master's level profession on page 13 of the report. And I just keep coming back to the thing, talking about the McKinsey report, which points out the best performing school systems across the world identified a drive towards making teachers a master's level profession. But what they singularly fail to acknowledge in this as well, that most of the education systems which have got master's levels professions are systems like Finland, the Scandinavian countries. And it's not just the fact that the teachers are masters that makes the difference there. It's the fact that they fund their schools, their whole education system, to a much greater extent. And I think one of my real things that I've got a warning about is that there's expectations that we will do X, Y, and Z at a time where there is less and less money to do anything in education, let alone start moving towards a master's level profession.
That's a really good point, Neil. I was actually highlighting in different colours as I was going through the report, and I only have two pieces highlighted in red, one of which was the idea that at the top of page 5, there's a statement that says, is this commitment to the development and the embedding of a robust model that will allow qualified teachers to identify appropriate learning opportunities and apply new skills. So the suggestion there is that teachers will be able to identify these things for themselves and then take those opportunities. And the reason I highlight that in red was, will this be the case? The question is. And the second piece was the funding. Where will the there's a statement at the top of page 6 that says, given the current economic climate, it is clear that effective partnership working needs to be an element in delivering the aspirations we have for Scotland's young people. And I think that suggests that perhaps there's an acknowledgement there that the money just isn't going to be there. Therefore, we are going to have to find stronger partnerships and lean on other areas in order to get this done.
And I think, can I come in here? Is that okay?
Yes.
I don't really agree, Neil, with your point that it looks like there will be central control of teachers' development. I didn't pick that up from the document at all. I was quite encouraged by the notion of an enhanced version of PRD, where teachers get to go along and say, you know, this is where my development needs lie and this is what I'm going to do about it. Mm-hmm. And the work that we're doing with our students just now, or our students are actually doing, I mean, we're riding the crest of the wave of what the students are doing. Our students are really interested in CPD from the very first moment they're on the course. Continuing professional development isn't something that's only for teachers. Continuing professional development is for everyone who is going to ever teach or be in education. So our students have, since July, you know, we did this all of last year and a bit of the year before, but since July we've had 20 new CPD projects established by students, and the costs have been really minimal. We've had all kinds of different ways of funding them if they needed funding, but a lot of them were free because, as Stephen said, we linked up with people in partnership who were interested in coming in and working with the students. So we've got things like Makaton training, paediatric first aid, we've got an interactive whiteboard training team, Now By Mouth, the charity working with us, we've got people in from Lomas Prison, dyslexia, I could go on for a long time. But all of these things are inspired by the students based on their own development needs. And this has to be my job. I need to create a whole new generation of teachers who understand that they can't sit for long enough hoping somebody's going to come along and have a course that's going to suit the needs that they have. And some of our graduates from last year are now taking that model out into their probation local authorities, and there are two local authorities who have our probationers out there starting up probation networks like that, where you look for CPD opportunities based on the development needs you have, but you design them for the people that you who want to come along and do that with you. So, you know, it's not knocking the fact that we have no money, we know that, but the easiest thing to do about that is complain. And I think one of the things we've been saying to the students is, well, how can you make yourself be the best? How can you take opportunities and find opportunities for you and your peers to continue to learn and do all the things that you want to be able to do when we don't really have the resources for that? So that, I just wanted to come in on that point.
No, I agree, Amanda. I mean, I'm sort of like, in a sense, I suppose I'm maybe flagging it up as greater than it is, but I was struck on, let me get this right, page 14, section 37, where there's a statement that providers are currently developing a new suite of master's level programs and talks are already underway between authorities and providers. And this is obviously what you're talking about. But what it strikes me is, because I've seen this happen in the past, that what ends up happening is that the providers, for whatever reason, and it mentions funding implications at the bottom of that paragraph, there's a sense that, well, we can only afford to offer X, Y, and Z, and it would be who would dictate that. Perhaps, and I hope, and I really have got my fingers crossed here, there will be a sense that there will be more freedom for teachers to develop their own professional learning in the sense of research-based projects, action research, and actually really following their own interests and seeing accreditation for that. I don't know how feasible that would be to actually manage, manipulate. But what that also got me very, very alarm bells ringing was that I suppose this comes back to the funding. In a sense, I realise that, so what I'm proposing or what I'm envisaging is something that we might call the Chartered Teacher Programme, whereby people follow their interests and receive accreditation for it. And I just fear that we had a really, you know, great system of developing chartered teachers, giving them opportunities, giving them a recognition for the learning, and in one fell swoop we've taken that away and then turned around and said we want to replace it with basically the same thing, but we're not going to put the money in for it. Or am I just being too bleak on that?
Well, maybe just come back to Amanda at this point. Amanda, you're talking about how things are changing within your, okay, it's outgoing, it's going to be a BA primary that's coming in the new course. It sounds as if your students are very much going to be attuned to the need for professional update, to take part in meaningful PRD. At the same time, it seemed in the National Partnership Group report that they were moving away from the recommendation that, in Donaldson's words, those who are new entrants to the profession should have a master's account open for them. So I'm just wondering whether there are changes within your own establishment or if you're seeing across initial teacher education sector actual projects which are trying to accredit new entrants at master's in the hope, but I suppose that they go on and complete a master's in the early phase of their career.
Our postgraduate course, and we're not the only university who does this, offers master's level credits for students who want to take them, so they can open their master's account while they're here doing their PGDE. Our new BA, and I feel a wee bit the same as you, Neil, about the new BA as you do about the chartered teacher. We like our BA. I was more than slightly offended by some of the rhetoric around getting rid of the BA and things like, you know, will the BA course isn't academic enough, as if I'm up here teaching people, I'm still at work as you can guess, as if I'm teaching people how to colour in and play in the sandpit. So we're happy, but you know, the easiest thing, as I said earlier on, is just to moan about it. We're using this as a driver for real change. One of the things that we're campaigning for is a fifth year, if students want to stay on, if they want to do a built-in MEd at the end of the undergraduate programme. Now, we have students who start with us at 16 and a half and 17, which across the globe is very young to come and do undergraduate study. We know from the students that we have on the course that some of them would be interested in a fifth year to stay and taught MEd rather than having to do it part-time study or do it at weekends or whatever. The problem with that is if they stay on for a fifth year, and I'm sure that you'll be saying that can't be the truth, the probation place isn't held open for them. There's a, you know, the regulations at the GTC don't allow a student who's staying for a taught MEd to have the probation place held open for them for a year. So there are regulations around that we need to look into. Regulations never bother me because they were always produced by people. So people can always change them if we make a strong enough case for that. But definitely we have a model of this undergraduate programme for 4 years that would have a taught MEd at the end. We're not having a joint honours degree with a primary teacher being a wee tiny part of it. We know what we do with our students is very good. We know we're producing really very good primary school teachers, and we want to hang on to a lot of that. So at Strathclyde, we've kind of flipped Graham Donaldson's notion of sending the students outside the School of Education to learn about other things, because we will absolutely do that. Students will be able to get 120 credits out of their 480 out with the School of Education. But we need to be very careful about what that actually means. how can it just be enough to go and do 120 credits or 240 credits or 1,000 credits in another area and just hope that that's going to be enough to make you a good teacher? If that was the case, we could shut down all the teacher education programmes and just get people straight from degree programmes. Oh, does that sound like a country a wee bit near us? But that notion that we don't add value to anybody's education by bringing them into university to meet is perverse. So what we have offered at Strathclyde, and it will be new from next year, is undergraduate students coming to study in the humanities and social sciences. All students will take three subjects in their first year, including education students. So an education student could study education, history and psychology, or French and Italian, whatever they want to do. But for the first time ever, students will also be able to study history, French, and education as a third subject or their second subject, because we feel that in education we've got a lot to offer and we can give students a real different lens in which to look at the world. All of our students who are doing education in first year next year, whether they're going to be teachers or not, will have the opportunity for a placement for working with children within a community setting. So it's those kind of big changes that we're trying to make, ready for people to do masters is something that you go out there and, you know, you accept that you're going into a profession where masters is something that you could go on to do, but professional learning is absolutely expected of you. None of us want to go to a doctor who graduated in 1975 and never bothered to learn anything else, and that makes me very, very nervous. But sometimes in schools we get quite annoyed, you know, even when I was a teacher in school and I taught for 10 years, that notion of, you know, who do they think they are telling me I need to keep going and learn. And I don't mean that for every teacher, but there's certainly that notion out there that professional development is going to be a pain for some people in some ways. So I can only do the bit that I can do here at the university, and I hope we can do it well.
Can I?
Let's
just come in there, Amanda. One of the things was last night or the night before, I was listening to you on Inside Learning, the other podcast, talking about the CPD your students had organised, and I was just blown away. It was very powerful and very different to the 20 years ago or so I was at Jordan Hill at the time. The thing, though, I thought, listening to them, was that they obviously were spending a huge amount of time and effort on that, and when you talk about maybe teachers getting slightly disenchanted with CPD as they get older, it may be just because they are getting older and they've got families and all these other things, so we can't expect the same amount of effort as your guys were putting in, or it sounded like they were putting in right across the profession for...
Really?
How many hours a week do you think they were putting into that? It sounded to me like an awful lot.
You have to remember I've got nearly 600 students.
Yeah. Okay.
So if there are, you know, the 44 who are out at the literacy clinic in a school in the north of Glasgow helping children to read better and be more excited about reading and have real learning gain there, will not be the same students who, perhaps some of them might be, who are doing Makaton training, or people who are doing paediatric first aid, or the student who's running the lecture soon on Islam, and the impact of, you know, our society's beliefs on children in the class. Who, you know,
I realise you've got a range of things. I'm just wondering about, say, a weekly time commitment that you've
none,
spoken about.
No, there's no weekly time commitment, and they can do it in at a time that suits them. They don't. It's not mandated. They don't get credits for it. There are no hoops to jump through. They do it because I spend a lot of time talking to them about employability. We have a student who a few years ago applied for a job, and there were 512 applicants in a primary school. They need to be the best. Now, we absolutely believe that our course is setting them up to be very good teachers. But if you go along for an interview and everybody is from the same course, I'm not saying we are the best course, I'm just saying that we don't have a very good course. What is it on your CV that is going to set you apart? Our students often have kids, they hold down two jobs, but CPD is really exciting and something that they really want to be involved in. Now, I know Paul Campbell's listening on the bus to this, and I would love him to tweet in and tell us whether this is something you can continue when you're in your probation year, or whether you can continue this as a teacher, because a lot of our students have carried this on into their probation year, and they're hosting other teachers in their classroom, or they're sharing the skills that they've got with the people in their school and the school down the road. It needs to become a habit of mine. CPD is something that we do. It's not something that's done to us. So, you know, I don't want, and it's nothing to do with age, it's not about getting older. People can be jaded at 28. But I would like our students to go out there with the notion that CPD is just, that's part and parcel of your job. And unfortunately, for some people, if you graduated a long time ago, it wasn't part of your job then, so there are a whole lot of new skills to be learned by people. Mm. But nobody's going to leave this university thinking that CPD isn't something you should be doing alongside your day job.
I just want to bring you in here now. I'm interested, we're hearing about the work that Amanda's doing, and of course, I think when you look at National Partnership Group report, the likes of yourself, Stephen, your work in the commercial and other sectors, and Neil, your involvement with Pedagoo, I'm just wondering whether you see that the report opens doors for the kind of things that you're doing. One of the things that I fed back to the co-chairs of the National Partnership Groups was that it was the various institutions that have served as well or not in up to this point, who would really be kind of relevant in taking forward many aspects of the work in National Partnership Group. And I reflected back to the co-chairs that I still felt that the new kind of bottom-up approaches or whatever, the new forms of CPD that many of Amanda's students are involved in, and as well as the commercial and third sectors, just didn't seem to have an opportunity to get into this.
I think, I suppose, in a sense,
in master's level, possibly excludes you kind of people.
Yeah. I don't know if Steve wants to come in, but one thing I would say at the moment is, I mean, I think the fact that I'm even having this discussion now is testament to the fact that if you go out and find your own CPD and you get involved in so many of the great communities which have sprung up with the advent, I suppose, of Web2 technology, which have allowed them to spring up, then the possibilities for going out and finding more and improving your practice are absolutely phenomenal. We've had TeachMeets being praised by Graham Donaldson himself. We've got Mike Russell praising Pedagoo as, you know, a really good model for teacher development. Mm-hmm. And yet, ironically, through this report, you know, we're the very organisations that don't have any official accreditation. And I don't think there'll be many teachers who haven't sort of come away from a TeachMeet or one of the Pedagoo Fringe and thought, you know, that was a waste of time. Just about every single time you're getting people coming away enthused, they've learned something new, they've learned something practical, they've learned something they want to go away and do to change their practice. And I just fear that as soon as you start bringing a lot of these things formally into a set format, you lose a lot of the spontaneity and the things that give the joy to teaching, which are then communicated to pupils. But I don't know, I might be being a little bit idealistic with that, but I think, you know, from my point of view as well, I mean, the likes of Stephen, you know, as a commercial entity, you know, you've got a vested interest, obviously, in becoming involved in this. I don't know if you see that you're likely to have opportunities closed down or opened up.
Well, actually, there's a whole host of things in there, which I think is really interesting for me as a commercial entity. I've always operated as a commercial entity, specifically now that I'm running my own business and I am a one-man team, in that my genuine passion is education, and my genuine passion is what reaches the children, and my medium for that is the training that I provide for teachers. And I think what's really interesting is... Just to go back to one of Amanda's points, was that it's really interesting some people's take on CPD, the whole almost expecting something for it. Like there's some expectation that there better be an accreditation at the end of it, or there better be some recognition. Now, recognition is natural, but there better be some official recognition or some pay structure recognition for it. And if you look at where I come from with that, I mean, I have to develop or I fail. I mean, quite literally, if I don't do something new week on week, day on day, my company will just disappear off the face of the planet. And teachers, I think, sometimes don't think that way. They don't, because they don't have to. And I might be, please don't take this the wrong way, teachers out there, but I think it was the year before, I actually bought a website called Summer CPD. And I had this idea that I was going to run summer CPD sessions. And what was really interesting to me, and I just kind of voiced it out there as an experiment, but down south of the border, the buy-in was phenomenal. People were just saying, look, tell me the dates, tell me how much, I'll be there. North of the border, I could not get a single one organised. Not one. And some of the attitudes I was getting back, some of the answers, you know, when I was saying who would come along to this, I was getting a phenomenal amount of people who would say, well, what's in it for me? What do I get? Why would I do that? And I just thought that was really, really interesting, that CPD seems to be something that's judged by what it's worth to the individual, rather than thinking, this is my career and I want to be better at this. I want to be consistently good at this. I just thought it was really interesting.
Can I jump in and just defend maybe the honour of the Scottish teacher? Because I work delivering CPD and ICT in a local authority here.
Yeah.
And not this year, this last summer, but the summer before, we were asked by the QIS to put on a couple of summer courses.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up having five full day courses over the summer holidays, and got well over 100 teachers from 100 schools out to do a day CPD. And we could have filled more if we'd had more time. And we did repeated it again this year, and we did that. I think the main key to getting the people out was that these are people who wanted to come out anyway. They would have come out in term, but that would have cost too much money. We put on free to the end user, free to everybody CPD, and the people were, you know, we filled the seats many times.
Definitely the issue, John, definitely the issue. However, I also know what authority you're in, and I'm not surprised, because that I work in your authority, and I'm not surprised by that. But just to counter that, one authority in particular, just slightly further south in Scotland, offered to pay. My contact in question said, look, you put it on, I'll pay for the teachers to be there, and he never got one sign-up. And they were, and it was being paid for by the authority. So it was just a bit worrying, and yet south of the border, it was jumped on. So it's just an observation from an independent provider. I'm not making comment on anything in particular. It's just an observation. If we're talking about the provision of CPD and why people would want to be continually professionally developed, it's just an interesting observation of mine.
Can I come in there?
Yeah.
Yes, please do, Amanda.
I think we need to create a culture where going along to things in your own time, or doing master's level study, or going in a course your head teacher wants you to go on, has to be celebrated, not in the kind of a come to assembly and we'll all clap, I don't mean that, but it needs to be okay for you as a teacher to be really interested in your own development. It needs to be okay for you as a teacher to be bright. We need to stop this thing where teachers are apologetic when they're doing master's level study and scared to tell people in the staff room because they don't like the way that people respond to that. I'll give you statistics. Last year, I'll give you an example. Last year, we had a number of PGDE students signed up for the master's level classes in September when they started their course. They went out to school in their first placement and came back and said, you know, we've decided not to do our master's classes because the teachers we're working with in school say it's really not worth it, you don't need to do that. So that's just an example. The other thing is that if you work in a culture and an environment where it's success. Sorry, I just heard a terrible noise. If success and leading CPD opportunities and being enthusiastic about your own learning, if we can try to cultivate that, you start to create your own success. In university, I have understood, because people have asked me time and time again, how does it work in your university and in other places that I've tried it hasn't worked? I absolutely understand that it's about me relinquishing power. And if I relinquish power, the students who take on that power or that responsibility need to take it really quite seriously. But I'm going back to a point that Neil made about how do we, you know, people being interested or not interested. You cannot lift a model that somebody else is using. We spoke about it about Finland earlier on and hope to try and cram it into the space of the hole that we've got in our profession. You can't look at what we're doing in Strathclyde and say, well, do you know what, let's have that everywhere. And we keep hearing that. We've got a wonderful CPD society, which has nothing to do with other CPD things that I was telling you about. They run their own teach meets, they run their own training, they run their own CPD events on top of the other CPD that other students are running here. And I've heard people saying, we need one of them in every university. Yeah, we'll have one in every university if you understand the thinking and the philosophy behind it. If you get the students who are engaged enough to want to take it on and the staff who will support them in a facilitator's role. In the same way that when we look at Finland and we think, well, wow, look at their grades, they've got master's level, we better have that too. And you know, that alone is going to make us a much better profession. We're not good at looking at things and trying to find out why they're good in the context and the situation in which they're good. We just look at things that are good, and it comes from trying to get a fast fix for everything. I want to see what they're doing. That's really good. I want that. Now, our poor colleagues in universities down in England are under terrible, terrible pressure from the government. And I saw on Twitter last week somebody saying if Michael Gove was in charge of the NHS, instead of having MRI scans, we would all be having leeches applied. It's the idea of what worked for me, what worked in the past, what made it good. We're having that. And we need to be really, really careful with all models of CPD for all teachers, from our youngest undergraduate to someone who's about to retire, that we are creating things where there's a need, where it's fit for purpose, and where people are pleased that the people in their staff room want to go and find out new things.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Sorry, David.
Sorry, Neil, I'm just going to jump in very briefly and then I'll let you continue. If you're listening to the live show, you might want to get in touch by email. It's edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, and if you're on Twitter, if you just put your comment or question to the panel and include the hashtag edutalk. I should have said earlier on that you can actually join us, you can actually call in tonight and actually take part in the panel just for the last 10 or 15 minutes. So if you're burning to join in, is get in touch through those two channels, or contact myself, David Noble, or John Johnson direct, and we will arrange to pull you into our a Skype conference call at the end of the day before the show finishes. And just a reminder, if you've just joined us, we're talking about the National Partnership Group report about taking forward professional learning for Scotland's teachers, and we're joined this evening by Amanda Corrigan, Stephen Reid, and Neil Winton. Neil, on you go.
Yeah, no, I'm just sort of picking up. I mean, I probably didn't give Amanda enough credit, because I'm well aware that a lot of her students are coming out and they really are on the ball. They know about Teach Meets, they know about developing, and you see these fantastic people coming through the profession now. And if you're in a school, you can sometimes compare them to the people that are like been in the job for 20, 30 years. And I had a wonderful teacher that I worked beside when CPD started really becoming the big thing a few years ago. He said, but what if I'm as professional as I wish to be? And being honest, you couldn't fault her, but she was, I mean, genuinely, she was one of the best teachers I've ever worked with. But one of the things I'm just thinking about, you know, this notion that teachers in school should plan and evaluate CPD more directly and its intended impact on young people's progress and achievements. I get that. I understand that, because we're all accountable. But one of the things that strikes me is that when you go to somewhere like Teach Meet, the joy of it is that you see things that you wouldn't normally see. You see people from different sectors working in different areas, doing things that you may never use. But by the same token, it's this encouraging atmosphere of seeing what other people are doing and sharing good practice. If you start having to measure that, which is one of the proposals here, that all CPD has to be measured in its impact, then you're going to miss the real life-changing events, the things that do make a difference. And I would say, as an analogy of that, and I know it's a much touted analogy, the story of Steve Jobs, who, you know, sort of sat in calligraphy classes because he quite liked them and didn't give it any real thought. And then about 10 or 11 years later, when he was designing the original Apple Macintosh, that knowledge came back to him. It was something he'd seen, something that he just was interested in, and that has had a direct impact on every computer that we've bought ever since, because of the way that they use fonts. And I just fear, I've seen things at Teach Meets or CPD sessions which were, you know, ad hoc, thrown together. I've seen probationers, I've seen people at Strathclyde doing it at a Teach Meet, showing me things which, you know, years later have come back to me, so that I can use that. And I just fear that if we start getting too focused, too directed, it has to be too ticky box, that we're going to lose really the whole point of CPD. Is yes, it should have value, yes, it should have some structure, but there should, I really do believe that there should be a real element of discovery, of trying things out. the things that we're trying to encourage the children to do, the learners to do for Curriculum for Excellence, and yet, you know, we're saying that's what they should be doing, but as far as the teachers are concerned, you've got to do this. And I think there's a paradox there.
Can I just say, Neil, that you used two words there that I thought I wish we could hear them more often. The first one you said was, it's a joy. I love that. I love the fact that you can go to things and get real joy out of learning and being with people who want to learn and people who want to share things, and you can feel your brain growing. I know that that's not physiologically possible, and I hope none of my BEd ones are listening, because I'm always telling them after my maths classes I think it's hurting. That's a sign.
It'll be in every essay from now on.
I know, but I love that idea of joy. Another thing you said was discovery. Now, I wonder, and I'm throwing in a devil's advocate question to, you know, everybody who's on the panel, or if you're listening, you can tweet in. Do you think that joy comes from being with people who are like you? Do you think that joy and the discovery come because you're sitting in a room of people who really love learning, and they love sharing what they do, and they're passionate, and they're enthusiastic, and they're all of these things that you would want in a teacher? Is that where the real joy comes from? Would you have the same feeling if every teacher that you knew was made to go along to these things?
I think that's a really good point, actually. Because I love teach. I'm like Neil. I love teach meets, and I love sharing that knowledge. And when you know that your passion is being shared, and I do think you would probably lose a huge amount of the impact if everyone was made to go to a teach meet.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's what strikes me is I'm going to cite Perigou here, and I apologise because it's not really meant to be a blatant plug for it. But I heard somebody give me a brilliant description of how they viewed Perigou, and they said it's like a staff room full of optimists. And we've all been in schools, we've all seen the cynics in the staff room, and it doesn't matter what new initiative comes along, they're going to knock it down. You could argue it's because of fear or lack of knowledge, and gradually they'll get to it. I've got the real privilege at the moment of working in a school where the new curriculum's here. Okay, so how do we do it well? And I'm just thoroughly loving this new school that I'm teaching at the moment, because it's such a completely different mindset. And we need to see more of that round and about. Now, this is, I suppose, wait, Amanda, I know that you're I was going to say churning out, but that's the wrong phrase, but you're providing Scotland with highly trained, highly motivated teachers who are looking for opportunities to develop all the time. I'm seeing that in the classroom. I'm seeing teachers, recently qualified. You're sort of saying, God, you're so much better than I was when I qualified. Your whole attitude is different. And I really do want to see more and more of that coming through. In a sense, I suppose I'm agreeing with some of the recommendations of the report, in that's their ideal. But how we get that for all teachers, as Stephen says, how you get that for everybody, or as Amanda was saying, I don't know.
Well, I think...
Sorry, Stephen, on you go.
That's okay. Well, no, it was just very briefly to echo what Amanda said, though, and I think it comes back to what is not by no means a short process, but it's the process of developing a culture. And when I read the report, just to get back to the report, when I read the report, I do get the overriding idea that that's what they're trying to do. There needs to be a culture in Scotland of a willingness to develop and share that development. And I think, but the question is, does the report do it right? I suppose, but the culture is definitely the question.
I'm just going to drop in a point here, and it's something that I've brought up a number of times recently, and I think it's encapsulated with some of the recommendations of the Doran Review report into the right support at the right time for children with complex additional support needs. Now, Peter Doran talks about the need to kind of upskill right across the public sector, but in particular teachers, in relation to how they support children with complex additional support needs. And he challenges the universities and Education Scotland and others to produce better support for courses as well. And that's just, I work with pupils with additional support needs also, and there's certain things that we probably need to get better at, and it, many of these areas will link to legislative changes in Scotland to try and actually mandate a difference. So when we talk about self-directed CPD and kind of good fortune, Neil, about coming across CPD, maybe it's online and new forms of face-to-face, I wonder if what Peter Doran's talking about kind of encapsulates maybe a split, or maybe captures the fact that there's no way of defining exactly what CPD is and how that compares to professional learning. So I suppose what I'm saying is, you know, at the moment we're contracted to 35 hours CPD, there's no suggestion of that changing. If somebody does a master's, well, we know that's hundreds of hours of study, and we know that within the 35 hours contracted CPD, and I think it's borne out in the report, there is a recognition that it needs to be for your own personal and professional needs, but as well it also has to, through PRD processes, be linked very much to the school improvement plan. So I'll just put it to the panel, are we talking about two very different things here? Do we actually need to narrow down our definition of CPD to engage with the National Partnership Group report and maybe just get on with all the other types of wonderful professional learning in our own time and keep that out of the control and the prying eyes of certain others within management structures in Scottish education?
If I could just come in first, I wonder if it's a bit of both, because I noticed that on page 4, section 2, the first statement is teacher education and in the keyword I've highlighted is career-long learning. I think you're right, there's a difference between CPD and career-long learning. And I think to some degree, people who are carrying out effective career-long learning might not realise they're doing it, and quite to the degree they're doing it either, because I actually don't believe you can be in a career like teaching or even a field like education and not learn something every day, and so I think they are two very different things.
I think we need to move away as well from this notion that every teacher has to know everything. Constantly bombarded by people who send me emails and policy documents and requests from unions and Education Scotland. You know, what are you doing in your course about a 2+1 model of language? What are you doing about Gaelic on your course? What are you doing about dyslexia on your course? What are you doing about children with profound and complex needs in your course? If these students are to stay on this course until they covered everything that the world wanted them to cover, you would all have to work until you were about 85, because a course would last for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I think actually professional development or professional learning can be the way to help people become specialists in areas or to really go and find out about things in depth. I cannot provide on our course every complex need, every additional support need. I cannot provide that on the course that I have. If you think of all of the children in your school and all of the needs that they have, whether that's to do with disability or not, I mean, it can be to do with poverty, it can to do with parents who have addiction problems, parents who are in prison, all these things that are barriers to learning. Mm. If these students had to stay and learn every single one of these things, it would be impossible ever to get out to the classroom. And that's definitely for me where CPD kicks in. But back to the idea of, you know, where does the joy come from for Neil? If you think of people on a planet, you know, at one side of the planet are the heavily, highly engaged, motivated, enthusiastic, I want to learn people. And at the other side of the planet are people who, it doesn't matter what you're going to try, they don't really want to learn anything. And in the middle, there are people who can usually be swayed either way. You can usually pull the majority along with you, you can create that kind of culture. And I think as schools, when school development plans are being put together, we need to think about, well, right, who's taking responsibility for this and how can that help these people to develop? I think some of the comments in the National Partnership Group about your CPD having to hang in with the school plan isn't to be restrictive. It's because people are demanding to do things that have actually got nothing to do with the development of the children in their class. And I'm sure that's a tiny minority of people, which is a shame when that a whole report starts to hang on things like teachers have got poor literacy and numeracy skills, so we better get more literacy and numeracy skills in. And you think, well, how many people are you actually talking about? But this idea of all of these reports are telling teachers what they all have. You know, the children in the country are obese. There are too many of them obese. Tell the teachers to fix it. There are children being abused out there. Make sure the teachers know about it. That it's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, actually, I think you're hitting on a really interesting point there, because what assumptions are being made about existing teachers in the report? You know, it's the And I have real problems with this notion of leaders, in the sense that, you know, a leader to me is somebody who has specific knowledge or can do something that others can't, but can share that knowledge with others. But for all too often education, by leader they just mean a manager, but not giving them as much money. And I do fear that there's this notion that, oh well, because you will lead this, you're a leader, so you will lead this. And I'm just sort of thinking, you know what, I know I'm showing my age here, but I go back 15, 20 years and actually know they were called assistant principal teachers, not leaders. And I do fear that, you know, I accept that money's tight, but there's an awful lot of this that strikes me as trying to get improvements without paying any money. I mean, to come back to the master's idea, this is something that I mooted as a question. If they expect a master's level profession, will teachers who achieve the master's level see a suitable or a commensurate increase in their salary? If they don't, well, what's the incentive to go and do a master's? And similarly, who's going to pay for the master's if there's no incentive at the end of it? Because the authorities aren't going to have the money to pay for every teacher to go and do a master's level degree, and the teachers certainly aren't going to pay for it if they don't get anything at the end of it. So, you know, if I take a worst case scenario, it might just die on the vine through lack of funding.
I think the funding question's such a shameful one as well, because again, coming from, I have a very small business, but I just can't help thinking that if I ran a very big business, I would give more to education, because surely, now I don't have children, but there are CEOs of companies out there and directors and all kinds who have children who go to schools, and those schools are underfunded, and those children, you know, the teachers aren't able to photocopy and the children don't have pencils and technology is not being supplied and stuff. And I just think it's shameful that that there's this expectation that if the government can't pay for it, then nobody will. And that's maybe a side point to this whole discussion, but whenever we talk about funding and who's going to fund the education side of things, I almost subconsciously hang my head, because I think we're not doing enough. The private sector isn't doing enough. Carry on.
John?
It should then be, if it is the need more, it should be taken out in tax, so it's taken out evenly. We shouldn't be relying on the goodwill,
I agree with that.
The goodwill
totally.
Of people to decide, yes. You know, that... We can't. Yeah. Then the government can say, "Oh well, we'll leave it to what is it, big society or whatever, or we'll leave it to these entrepreneurs who are going to give us all this money." And
there definitely needs to be a balance. But I just think there could be more done on both sides. I think there needs to be much more of a commitment to what is obviously one of the key pillars of our society, which is education, and the government need to do more with that. But at the same time, I think other people could be doing more, because at the end of the day, these are the teachers, these are the schools and the teachers that are supplying the education for our children and the future of Britain. But that's
it might be more. Sorry.
Can I come in on Neil's point about, you know, well, if people are going to become leaders, and what does that actually mean? I would say for the majority of people listening to that, as soon as they read that or read that in the report and when they hear Neil talking about it, they'll immediately go to leaders in schools. And that's where I think there's a problem with the report. Everything seems to be about, well, what are the people in schools going to do about this? And, you know, I run the largest undergraduate primary education programme in the country. I want to be in that college of leadership. I want to learn from people who are in schools, people at the GTC, people in the local authorities. I became course leader and I didn't get a pay rise. I did a master's. Nobody cared whether I had a master's or not, because I work in a university. Lots of people have got PhDs, so it really isn't a big deal at all. But I feel as if often, as soon as we read this, because the majority of people who work in education are teachers, we have this really narrow view of documents like the National Partnership Group. And I think we lost some of the freshness and some of the challenge of the original report by Graham Donaldson in the National Partnership Group report. And I think the Cabinet Secretary's response was difficult to find. You know, we just looked at the report and he had released it and said, well, there's the report. We didn't really have a response. But I really think we need to look at education as everyone. You know, where are the leaders in Education Scotland? Where are the leaders in HMI? Where are the leaders in the General Teaching Council? What kind of qualifications do they have? Are they in the College of Leadership? How are they participating in partnership. So it's just a plea really to everybody out there to think about this in the context not just of people in schools, because we really are very, very interested in being involved in this, but sometimes I get involved in conversations and think they don't mean me at all, although when I read the report I think you really do.
I wonder that, when certainly I think, you know, Graeme Donaldson was in the Times Ed last week, and he alluded to being slightly frustrated at the National Partnership Group report. So, you know, Amanda, Stephen, Neil, your involvement in professional learning goes way back, and no doubt you'll have read the Donaldson report, Teaching Scotland's Future. You know, there do seem to be some areas that haven't been taken forward. Now, I don't know what Graeme Donaldson was alluding to, but certainly the notion of the hub school seems to have been accepted as being one way forward to showcase partnership and take forward partnerships within local communities. But I think it was stated in the report that that would be by no means a kind of uniform method of local partnerships. The whole Teach First model down south, it was recommended that was looked at in greater depth. The General Teaching Council seemed to still be very much, leaving the door open to Teach First, but saying that at the moment progress is, there is no progress towards the Teach First model being tried out in Scotland. So I'm wondering if there are other areas that you yourself are frustrated in terms of the pace of change. Leave for one moment the whole kind of notion of culture change, which I think we've already touched on. So would somebody like to come in first on that?
I'm going to pick up on something about the replacement of CPD Find, if I may, David. Mm-hmm. There's this expectation that GLOW will be the be-all and the end-all for the e-portfolio and everything like that. And as you'll be aware with my work with the ICT Excellence in Education Group, we're not really in a place to make commitments which are in this document, saying, you know, the e-portfolio will be ready for use by all teachers in Scotland by August 2013, because quite simply the decision is yet to be made as to what shape or form GLOW will have. But for me as well, with the ICT thing, it does raise a couple of really interesting questions, because through effective use of ICT, that's a phenomenal way, as I think we're all aware, we're doing it here, of sharing learning, of sharing good practice, of finding great CPD opportunities. And I think, you know, there's things that, you know, Donaldson himself has alluded to, that there's an expectation of these new tools to be taking more centre stage as part of the form, the structure. And I just fear that, you know, there's some sweeping generalisations in the report which, you know, are we're going to struggle to fulfil, certainly in the stated timescale. And I don't know if that's true of that. Is it true of other aspects of the report? I've shut everybody up now, I can tell you.
I was actually quite excited about the replacement for CPD Find, but simply because I think, in terms of my approach and coming from outside and needing to be seen and found by teachers, I wondered how that would look. I did note, however, with some concern about the fact that it was immediately assumed that it would be under GLOW and within GLOW, I work with GLOW when I'm in schools, but I can't. I suppose I'm not in a position to comment because I am out with the actual school system. But it did say a new tool to replace CPD Find, which will gather quality professional learning opportunities and provide communities of practice. And then just underneath that, it says GLOW. It'll be hosted on GLOW and should be accessible to as wide a range of teachers and other education staff as possible. I actually think that statement sounds like a bit of a get-out clause. It will be hosted on GLOW and it should be accessible to as wide a range of teachers as possible. I mean, if GLOW's going to do what it's going to do, it should be them all.
Yeah.
Can I blaspheme?
You can, Amanda. Go.
GLOW's a nightmare. Go on, say it.
I don't have a GLOW account.
I'm only joking.
I don't have a GLOW account. I mean, that's blasphemy in this country. I don't have a GLOW account. I don't know how. Do you want me to go and get a GLOW account? Is that what the report is saying? That if I want to be a good leader, if I want to continue to have CPD, I have to have a GLOW account? And it's those kind of things that just frustrate me to death, where I think, most of my colleagues at university don't have a GLO account. We can have access to GLO for the times that we want to have GLO meets if we want to have it, but really the majority of our time, as long as our students have access to GLO and our students are running GLO CPD things in here, it's not the best way for me to keep the information I need because it doesn't match with the university system. And it's things like that that just make me feel like screaming with the document when we're talking about all the thousands and thousands of people across the country who are educators, but when the report comes out, it's about the teachers. One of the things I would like to talk about that I don't think has come through very well in the National Partnership Group report, but it's definitely there, is teachers taking a prime role in the assessment, school-based staff taking a prime role in the assessment of students while in placement. Now, we know that that can be people from the university, but teachers have been asked to take a much bigger role in the assessment of students while they're in school. And where is the training for these people to do that? I am out visiting students just now in school, and I am saying to the class teacher, look at this person's work. They don't understand why they're doing what they're doing, or there are too many children who have too much dead time in their hands. And when the class teacher's agreeing with me, I'll say, now, do you think there's anything that I'm saying that's unfair? No, I've seen that as well. And give me more evidence of unsatisfactory practice. And when I say that needs to be reflected in your school report, they say, but that's hard for me. Because that person has become the buddy of the student in the class. That person has become the student's champion in the school. That person has become that person's one-to-one supporter. And to be the person to turn around at the end and say, actually, you're not passing this placement, is very difficult if nobody's ever shown you how to do it. You've not had training to think about things around, how do I do this on a criterion-based form rather than talking about you as a person. So I think there hasn't been enough engagement with teachers in schools. I think when you mentioned the Donaldson report to some teachers, one of my very good friends said to me, who's that? And that was fairly recently. I don't think they've engaged enough with teachers, the people in schools that some of this is going to affect. And one of the other things I wanted to say was about the literacy and numeracy tests. Every one of my first years on the undergraduate programme has English at level B, intermediate two maths or equivalent. Why are they not literate and numerate if they've got higher English at B and intermediate two maths or better? And I asked Graham Donaldson directly, and he said, well, some of the literacy and numeracy skills they've learned earlier on in school are lost as they start to do these traditional qualifications. To me, it's things like that. We need to dig down deeper. We need to reflect harder on the qualifications they have. If you tell me a B at higher English does not make someone literate, I'm saying, well, why would that be the case?
Yeah. I'm just going to ask Neil Winton to come in with just a final thought. Then I'm just going to read out a couple of in relation to what you've heard, Neil. Nothing new necessarily, but then I'm going to just read out a couple of online comments, and then we'll finish up as we get to the hour mark. So, Neil, your final thoughts.
I think it's encouraging to have a report which accepts that CPD. Good quality CPD is an essential part of a developing profession. I'm encouraged by Amanda's comments about the way that initial teacher education is changing. I'm delighted that we've got people like Stephen who are willing to chip in. I just hope that, as has been alluded to, that actually things do move on and we do start seeing real changes here. It's as with the curriculum, I think we're on the verge of making real profound, deep-seated changes to Scottish education for the better. I think we just need to make sure we've got everybody on board and that we bring Scotland, you know, really the education system that our learners deserve. That's my final thought.
Thank you. Stephen and or Amanda, would you like to come in with your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are, I am encouraged by the report as an independent, but where I see, I mean, my job as an independent is to find my way into education. And where I find that best is in people like Amanda and Neil and yourselves and the people who are running Teach Meets and are already thinking about this anyway, the forward thinkers who are already thinking this anyway. So as I said, just going back to my original point, I think the report pulls together the positive elements, I think, of what people in pockets are already doing and tries to give it some sort of form. And I think one of Amanda's very first points was this is an opportunity for teachers throughout the country, education professionals actually, throughout the country to grasp this. And that includes, independents like me to grasp this and do something with it. and do it for ourselves. And I think that's my final thoughts.
And Amanda?
I've really enjoyed talking with you all, and I think sometimes we don't have enough opportunities for things like that, where people across sectors can come together, and I love this organic free flow CPD that we have, and I worry sometimes that by enforcing that on people it'll become something horrible. I would like us to go away with the thoughts of Neil Winton's joy and discovery, you know, that if that could colour
our shucks.
I know, if that could colour our profession, if you could say that every day that you felt a wee bit of joy and that there had been some discovery, I think that could really be powerful. Another thing that I want to say is that we can't ever forget that this report is about the future of Scottish education, and we're responsible for the education of a whole new generation of people in Scotland. We're the people who will be responsible if in 20 years' time there's another banking crisis, or if people are still going to war, or, you know, we've got politicians who don't care about people who are living in abject poverty, because we're creating that generation that's coming through. So my bottom line would be, my very last words would be, no more moaning, what can we do about it?
Hear, hear.
And John, what about yourself?
I just think it's interesting tonight that we seem to have come up with the sort of dichotomy between folk that are self-starters or follow serendipity or follow their own joy, and the need to pull more people in, because efforts like TeachMeet, which have maybe pulled in thousands of teachers, or Pedigoo has pulled in lots of folk, it's still a very small amount of the number of teachers.
Yeah.
I remember a wee while ago a colleague said to me, oh, I told somebody in school I was going to the Scottish Learning Festival, and this was a young, fairly newly qualified teacher, and their colleague turned around to them and said, what's that? So there's this kind of dichotomy between we want to encourage joyful, serendipitous CPD where everybody follows their own delights, and things that, like in the report where it says we're going to have this single e-portfolio developed for everybody to go by. And the trouble is that people who do their own thing, I don't want to change my record of CPD, which is, you know, thousands of blog posts over the last so many years, into something that's a formal e-portfolio. I want to just continue my continuous amateur development, but that's maybe not going to fit the bigger picture.
Okay,
that's a brilliant image.
Okay, just some of the online comments. How can I follow John's there? We've had Alison Bain tweeted with using the hashtag sucked in that she could be at Stirling Castle instead. She's listening to EduTalk, so that's fascinating. John Collins, who is a broadcaster in the Falkirk area, said that EduTalk is a shining example of targeted radio. If you're not teaching, it's way too inside baseball, but it is superb. And then actually getting to the topic of tonight, Paul Campbell was saying that commitment to CPD is not a task. I think this echoes his former course leader. It's a way of working, thinking and being. It doesn't take a designated time commitment. But he did also go on to say that in terms of his work previously, I think within CPD Strathclyde, he was saying that it was a maximum of 3 hours a week, and they felt that that was no mass, no significant.
And he was the one who was leading the society. He was the one who was actually leading the society, and it was 3 hours a week. So other people are just coming along and putting in their tuppence worth.
In terms of that kind of mindset, he's backed up on Twitter by Kathleen Thompson. So that's it, folks. That's it for tonight's show. It's been absolutely fascinating. And thank you so much to John Johnson, as ever, for helping to pull this together, and to our panellists, Stephen Reid, Amanda Corrigan, and Neil Winton. You can, of course, continue the discussion on Twitter using the hashtag EduTalk. Even if you're not on Twitter, if you just jump onto twitter.com and type in hashtag EduTalk, you'll be able to see the comments that are up there already. The archived audio from tonight's show will be available at edutalk.cc within the next couple of days. So thank you to everybody. Next week It's back to our 8pm slot. We're going to be joined by Claire Reid, who's Education Officer at the Ecology Centre, Kinghorn, Fife. But until next time, take care.